We are going to close Guantanamo, and we are going to restore habeas corpus, because we're not a nation that locks people up without charging them. We are not a nation that sends prisoners off in the dead of night to other countries to be tortured. That is not who we are.
That is Barack Obama speaking at Washington Square Park during the primaries. A federal judge ruled yesterday that the Bush administration had no legal basis for holding five Algerian natives arrested in Bosnia who were originally suspected of plotting to bomb the U.S. embassy there. This latest judicial blow to the Bush administration's post-9/11 legal strategy comes as President-elect Obama's advisors are studying how to fulfill this pledge to close the Guantanamo Bay detention camp. To update this story and talk about the future of terror detainees is Daphne Aviatar, a lawyer and legal correspondent for the Washington Independent. Daphne, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So what can you tell us about the case yesterday? What do we know about these detainees, and what was the judge's ruling on why they should be let go?
Well, the case yesterday is interesting, and I think it actually exemplifies how the federal court system could address these sorts of cases. I mean, first, it's important to note that the judge was appointed by President Bush. This was a Republican judge known as a conservative. And he looked at the evidence against these guys, which apparently consisted mostly of one classified document that had didn't have much substantive evidence at all. It was an anonymous source that seemed to name them as being somehow connected to this other person who had been arranging for people to assist al-Qaeda. And it was this very tangential connection, and he called it a thin reed that was just too thin to keep holding these men. They had never been charged with any particular crime, and they'd been held in Guantanamo for 7 years. So this was a very conservative judge who was able to see the classified evidence, which I think is important to recognize, too, because federal courts people have said that the federal courts aren't capable of handling these cases because they can't handle classified evidence. But here he closed the courtroom. He was able to look at the evidence provided by the CIA and say it just wasn't sufficient.
Was it a surprise that this particular judge decided this way? I mean, it seems almost from news reports that he was unhappy at having had to rule this way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, originally in this case, he had held that these men do not have the right to habeas corpus, and that was appealed, and eventually the U.S. Supreme Court said that they did, and the case went back to him, and I think he was not happy with the case, but interestingly, he also directed the Justice Department, which has the right to appeal his ruling. He said to them, you know, don't appeal this one. These guys have been in prison for 7 years already. That's enough. There isn't evidence to hold them. And that was also a very interesting thing. I mean, I think he maybe didn't want to be involved in these cases. Maybe he doesn't think the federal courts should be deciding them. But when he got the chance to look at the evidence, he realized there just wasn't a reason to hold them.
So Barack Obama is still saying that he wants to close Guantanamo. Let's listen to a clip of him from last week's 60 Minutes talking to Steve Croft about his plans.
There are a number of different things that you could do early pertaining to executive orders.
Right.
One of them is to shut down Guantanamo Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Another is to change interrogation methods that are used by U.S. troops. Are those things that you plan to take early action on?
Yes. I have said repeatedly that I intend to close Guantanamo, and I will follow through on that. I've said repeatedly that America doesn't torture, and I'm going to make sure that we don't torture. Those are part and parcel of an effort to regain America's moral stature in the world.
This is Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. We were listening to Barack Obama on the 60 Minutes last week. Our guest is Daphne Aviatar, and we're talking about what exactly President-elect Obama can do. So the case that was decided yesterday, that seems like a fairly easy class of people to dispose of, those for whom the evidence is thin. Do we have any sense how many people that might be and how big the sort of more thorny population is, people that the federal government believes are very dangerous and yet may be detained based on evidence that might be tainted by torture or other problematic evidentiary gathering techniques?
Yeah, we have a pretty good idea at this point. There's about 250 people left at Guantanamo Bay, and there have been about 750 detainees held there over the course of the last 7 years. The Bush administration has let go about 500 already, and this is mostly based on diplomatic arrangements with their home countries rather than a thorough review of the evidence. But what happens... Generally, the thinking is that because only about 20 people have been charged with crimes of the 250 that are still there, so generally people think that's who the government has evidence against as being a high-level detainees, people who they think are really dangerous. So those are the ones that you're not going to want to just let out on the street, but you probably want to have some sort of a trial for. I mean, the Bush administration at times has said that there are up to 80 people that they want to take to the military commissions that they set up, but they haven't charged that many, so it's not clear that they really have evidence against that many.
So of the 250 people, we're talking about, what, some 150 people that could potentially face very rapid release?
150, even 200. Obviously, there will be need to be some sort of procedure for determining who gets to go home and how. And that's been done basically through administrative proceedings. And I think it would probably continue to be done that way. I mean, some of these cases are now... You had habeas petitions filed in the federal courts on behalf of many of these detainees. And so that was the case yesterday. That was a ruling on a habeas petition. And many of them are already in that process. So that process could just go forward, and you could have the federal courts look at the evidence and decide, can we keep holding them or not? I mean, that's one way that some of the cases could be decided. You could also have an internal commission set up to look carefully at what is the evidence, do we have reason to hold them, and try to do something a little bit more expeditious.
Now, we know that Robert Gates, the current defense secretary, entered office saying he'd like to close Guantanamo. Condoleezza Rice has also said that that would be her preference, and yet it hasn't happened. Is there something that bedevils people who want to do this?
Well, I think it's, you know, closing Guantanamo is a great idea. I think it has to be done at this point, even just for its symbolic value. But it doesn't solve the problem of what to do with these people. And I think that that's why so far it hasn't been closed, because you have these people who are detained there. There's a lot of concern. First of all, you don't want to bring them all over to U.S. prisons, because if you're just going to send a lot of them home, if you don't really have evidence to hold them, then you may as well figure that out first. There's also in the United States a lot of resistance to having people who have been labeled potential terrorists and enemy combatants in the United States, even if they're in a secure federal prison. Somehow, you know, we're okay with murderers, but we're not okay with supposed terrorists. So I think there's been political issues with that as well. But I think ultimately, you know, closing it is complicated. You have to figure out, what do you do with these 250 people? You might have to bring a couple dozen to the United States to federal prisons. The other issue, one of the other things I think it's worth pointing out, is one reason it's difficult to send some of these people home, even ones that have already been cleared for release, it's already been determined there isn't evidence to hold them, is because if the United States doesn't have good diplomatic relations with their country, for example, Yemen, we're holding a lot of Yemenis who we know we don't really have much evidence against. And the reason is because we don't have very good relations with the Yemeni government. The United States doesn't trust what the Yemeni government is going to do when these people return home. And so as a result, they're kind of stuck. And that's happened to a large number of people.
So I should say my guest is Daphne, it's Evyatar, is that right?
Yes.
A lawyer and legal correspondent for the Washington Independent, Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking about the future of Guantanamo. So January 20th comes along and President-elect Barack Obama becomes President Obama. What are you hearing about what he's going to do and how quickly regarding all of this?
Well, you know, I'm hearing different things, and as you know, his transition team has sort of leaked some things and then been very quiet about other things. And I think some people started talking about this process, and there was an Associated Press article a couple of weeks ago that quoted some of his advisors, and then he responded by saying, we haven't decided anything yet, and clearly he didn't want that information leaked. So apparently, you know, it's hard to know, but apparently there's been discussions among some of his senior advisors, which include prominent law professors like Lawrence Tribe at Harvard, a variety of people, you know, Cass Sunstein at Harvard also, people who didn't, who at this point didn't want to talk to me for this article because they realized they're not supposed to be talking to the press about the
Nobody wants to talk to anybody.
Right, except somehow the information leaks out. But what seems to be happening is they're discussing whether they need to create a new national security court system to deal with this problem, either to deal with or both to deal with the decision of who gets to go home, do we have enough evidence to keep holding people, this preventive detention question, and the question of, okay, once we know these are high-level people that need to be tried, do we try them in the regular federal court system, or do we need a special court that will handle evidence differently? And I think that's where the issue gets really sticky.
Now, some of Obama's advisors, although they they're now have their mouths zipped shut, have been pretty clear about where they stand. I mean, you mentioned Lawrence Tribe. He's written several op-eds supporting the idea of a military commission. I wonder, though, I mean, what does this mean, a military commission, and how is it different from what the Bush administration has tried to do? And does Obama risk sort of going back on his promise on this issue?
Well, I think that Obama, first of all, would be very careful not to call it a military commission because I think he has made clear he doesn't like the current military commissions that are being used. But I think that anything else he did, he might call it a national security court, which is what some people are calling it. But it would risk the same sorts of attacks, which are that, you know, some of the big issues are what do you do if, say, some of the people who are considered very dangerous, what if the evidence you extracted from them all came out of torture? I mean, there were horrible procedures used on people, whether waterboarding or stripping them naked and making them stay out in the cold, using attack dogs to threaten them, sexual humiliation, all sorts of things that, you know, we've obtained documents showing what all of these sorts of procedures and techniques were against these people, and they're things that are not legal. So what do you do if all the evidence is tainted by that? In a traditional federal court, that evidence is inadmissible. And that seems to be a very difficult question, and that's where some people have said you need to create a new court because some of this evidence should be admissible, or you should have a new court that has more relaxed standards that doesn't have to follow every single federal criminal procedure rule. Jack Goldsmith and Neil Katyal, both law professors, very prominent law professors, one at Georgetown and one at Harvard, wrote in a New York Times op-ed last year very explicitly that they thought, you know, you shouldn't have to follow every jot and tittle of American law. The problem with that
Well, and Jack Goldsmith, in fact, worked in the Bush Justice Department and sort of left because even though he agreed with their policies to an extent, he thought that they had gone too far.
Right. Right. And he has very wide respect for doing that and wrote a book that was very critical of what the Justice Department was doing and because they had said that torture was legal, basically. But I think he still feels that, and he wouldn't talk about it now, but he has written that he still thinks that you could have special procedures to deal with these cases. And yet, I spoke to a lot of former federal prosecutors and federal defense lawyers who all feel very strongly, and law professors who all feel very strongly that the federal criminal courts are able to handle these cases and that, you know, this. I think the stickiest issue is what do you do about evidence that was obtained through torture? But the problem is it's notoriously considered unreliable. And that's one reason. I mean, the first reason we don't use it is because we don't want to encourage torture, but the second reason is that there's lots of evidence that when people are tortured, they'll say anything. So you've had people who've confessed to all sorts of bizarre things that they couldn't possibly have done just because they were tortured. And so,
but what about, like, in an extreme case, like someone like Khalid Muhammad, who, you know, is somebody who says he was the mastermind of 9/11 and other evidence points to that. But if, I mean, couldn't there be a case where you have someone that seems, you know, to have really committed crimes and yet the whole case has become infected with this tainted evidence that could there not be a case where under normal criminal procedure somebody like that would just walk?
You know, I mean, I guess it's possible, but I think Sheikh Mohammed is a good example because, like you said, there's other evidence that he was the mastermind of 9/11. And if that was the case, that other evidence would be admissible. But he's confessed to something like 37 crimes, you know, 37 terrorism attempts, you know, things ranging from attacks on the Pope to beheading Daniel Pearl to things that kind of seem a little bizarre. I mean, one person mentioned that he had confessed to things that happened in 1916. So I don't think that that's very reliable testimony. You know, you have to imagine also people who have been held, some of them in solitary confinement for years, or been put through sorts of torture procedures, might not be all that sane anymore. And it's going to be hard to use that testimony.
So you're saying, is that a bit of a straw dog, that somebody really dangerous goes free because the Bush administration's Justice Department gathered evidence, or the CIA gathered evidence that was so tainted? I mean, does your reporting suggest that that situation doesn't actually exist?
You know, my reporting suggests that it's possible, but that usually you're going to have other evidence that you can find. If the person really did it, there will be other people who can testify to it. There will be documentary evidence. There will be other sorts of evidence that will show, you know, weapons evidence that will show that that's what's going on, or at least show that they did something enough to hold them. It's what everybody said to me, really uniformly, that you can't use evidence that was based on torture because it's just not reliable.
So what is your read on what the Obama administration is most likely to do? I mean, if you have to sort of play it out over the next 2-3 months, what do you think we're going to see, especially right after he takes office?
Well, it's funny. I was trying to ask lots of people that question, too, and no one wanted to answer it. So I'm not going to speculate exactly what he's going to do. But I do think that there's a lot of pressure for him to close Guantanamo Bay, and that he's certainly going to do that, and I think close down the military commissions as they're currently set up fairly soon. And I think that he'll try to fairly quickly develop a procedure to deal with sending home the people who they really don't have evidence against, like the people that were ruled on yesterday in court.
A lot of this is... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, in terms of the high-level people, I don't have a read at this point on whether they're going to send them to federal court to be prosecuted or create some sort of special court system. The one thing that someone mentioned to me, which I thought was interesting, was that if you try to create a whole new special court, that's going to take a long time, and that there's a lot of pressure to get this moving very quickly, and that might itself be the reason why they don't create a special court system.
So a lot of the whole idea of Gitmo was sort of based on the Bush-defined war on terror. And so that people become prisoners of war in the war on terror. What are you hearing from the Obama people, from the Obama circle, about where they're going to take that idea of the war on terror?
That's another thing, actually, that I'm not sure. Again, his direct advisors wouldn't talk to me about this. I think most of the federal prosecutors and defense people that I've spoken to and law professors, the ones at least that don't call themselves a direct advisor, because, as you know, lots of people call themselves advisors to the president-elect.
And some people who are not advisors.
Right. Exactly. So you never know. I think the war on terror is going to have to be defined very differently. I think it's become this very big catch-all. And as someone said to me, you know, we're involved in a war in Afghanistan and in a war in Iraq, and neither of them have very much to do with al-Qaeda. And yet the war on terror is being talked about as if it's a war against al-Qaeda, which is this ill-defined group, and that war could go on forever. So the problem with having what you call a war on terror against an ill-defined group that can't be actually defeated is that you can hold people indefinitely forever. And that's really against all American constitutional principles. So I think we're going to see a much more careful definition of what the war on terror is, or even if it is. You know, we have a war on drugs, too, for example, but that doesn't mean we hold people indefinitely in prison forever because we suspect that they might know someone who was a drug dealer. And that's kind of what we're doing with the war on terror.
And we're going to have to wrap it up there. Maybe we'll check in with you in a little bit once all of this becomes more apparent. People start talking. Daphne Evyatar, a lawyer and legal correspondent for the Washington Independent. Washington Independent, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, how'd you like to see your gas price stay at $3.50 a gallon? We'll talk about that and more.